Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, I guess midwives have always been popular. You might have been one of the millions of people around the world who've regularly tuned in to watch the BBC's excellent drama, Call the Midwife. Well, while times and technology have certainly changed since when the series was set in London's East End in the 50s and 60s, the vital role played by midwives around the world is just as important as ever. This year, in fact, has been named the Year of the Nurse and the Midwife by the World Health Organization in recognition of the work they do, caring for mothers-to-be, delivering babies and looking after both mum and bub for weeks after the birth. While midwives are there for women at what's often their most vulnerable time, much of what they do goes on behind the scenes and well out of the spotlight. So I thought tonight we'll train a light upon them. We're going to speak with two midwives who've both got decades of experience behind them and have pretty much, I guess, seen it all. Love your questions to 1300 800 222. Text 0467 922 702. Marie, Mari Health heads a not-for-profit group called Midwives Australia, which supports midwives in private practice and provides information about midwifery services to women. Mari, good evening to you and welcome to Nightlife.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Phil.
Great to have you with us too. Also joining us is Liz Wilkes. Liz runs My Midwives. It's a private practice which provides one-on-one midwifery care for women in Queensland and Victoria. Liz, good evening to you and welcome aboard on Nightlife.
Thank you and good evening to you too, Phil.
Great to have you both experienced midwives with us. Look, Liz, we all know midwives deliver babies. That's a given. But there's a lot more to the job, I guess, isn't there? Tell us, give us a bit of a rundown on what midwives actually do.
Gosh, it's a much bigger job than just that, isn't it, Phil? We really
I would have thought that's enough, but still.
No, look, I think it's it sort of starts with women very early in pregnancy, and we're looking after them the whole way through that journey, sort of, you know, being the one-stop shop to make sure that everything's going well for both mother and baby, which, you know, there's lots to do in that space. And then obviously education, supporting them through their labour and birth. And then you top all that off with 6 to 7 weeks of care after the baby's born. And that's, you know, involving care again of both mum and bub, but on that time bub's on the outside, not the inside. So it's causing a bit more grief at that point in time.
Yeah, it's just, it's a specialised thing, isn't it? Is it common in all societies, the notion of the midwife, in other words, a healthcare professional who offers health and care to mothers and babies? Because I'm thinking of other stages in your life, you don't really have specialist practitioners, do you? But midwives, you do. Is it common in all societies to have them?
Look, I'll answer that one too, but Mari can chime in if she likes. And there's sort of a role of a midwife in most societies, but it's not the exact same role in all societies. I think that certainly most Western societies have a sort of a nursing / midwifery role, and it takes different sort of separations from both nursing and midwifery. But in other cultures, it's still very much the person in the village who supports the woman through that experience, and it's quite a sort of a more basic role, really, wouldn't you say, Mari?
Yeah, and I think it's about women's wisdom and about the skill that's passed from that cultural group through the generations. So there is very much an intrinsic women's role within it.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point, Mari, isn't it? Because that's how I've often seen it as well, that it's, I don't know, that midwives are the repository of ancient women's knowledge about things, and particularly about this event, childbirth, for example, when, especially if it's your first baby, many women are apprehensive, and it can be frightening that women know about these things in a way that men don't. Is that also part of it, do you think?
I think there are men that are midwives and do become involved in it, but I think it's an intrinsic part of women's wisdom about being able to walk the walk with women through that whole cycle. And I think it's also about walking the walk with the families that are part of that. It's not just about the women, because we are very much there to support the families and the extended families quite frequently because of the stress and the whole involvement. So I think it's much bigger than just a women's issue. I think it's a societal issue.
Mm. Liz, tell me about the training for midwives over the years. Perhaps once upon a time there wasn't formal training, was there? There certainly is these days, isn't there?
Yeah, certainly not. In the early years, you know, it was that sort of, as Mari's referring to, a very much a cultural and a village learning and a hands-on learning, someone that has sort of seen what's happened for other members of their family and people that are surrounding them. Then went sort of through a bit of a nursing era in Australia where it was part of a nursing training. So you sort of did your nursing and then went on and did midwifery study following that. And we've now gone sort of almost another level again where we do actually a Bachelor of Midwifery where people do their midwifery as a separate degree at university. And then to become a private midwife, you actually have to do another 3 years hands-on across the full scope of midwifery practice before you can actually go out and work in a private practice. So it's a fairly extensive sort of training program these days.
Mm. Yes, exactly. I mentioned at the start of this that often when you get pregnant, you think, oh dear me, I must get an obstetrician. People often ask, who's your obstetrician? Yeah. Who's your obstetrician? Whereas really, unless there's a problem, you don't actually need an obstetrician, do you? Given that an obstetrician is a specialist really in problems relating to childbearing and surgery. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. And I mean, certainly in the last sort of the last decade really, we've seen a sort of resurgence of midwifery as we've started to realise that, you know, we're drifting very much into the space of it, birth becoming a really specialist medical event. So, yeah, we really have seen that a bit of a resurgence and the opportunity for women to seek out their own midwife instead of their own obstetrician.
Mm. We've heard more in recent years, Mari, about pregnant women using doulas. In fact, both our children were born, I don't remember the term at all, but we'd certainly heard of midwives, of course, and used one. But what's a doula?
A doula is traditionally more of a woman offering non-medical support and information to other women and their partners during the birth and the postnatal period, and they work in different ways, but they don't have the education level the background of midwifery behind them, so they're not recognised in the same way.
Mm. It's true, isn't it, to both of you, but Liz, possibly first up, it's true that by and large, birth being a human thing is usually, I'm not trying to trivialise or downplay problems, though there are problems, of course. But generally there aren't, are there?
Generally, it's a very, we need to look at it sort of in the sense now that it is very much a normal life process.
Yeah,
and I think that, you know, most women, at least sort of 75% of women, will have a baby with really no drama at all if they're left kind of, sort of fiddled with, if you like. So if things are left to normal doing, they will just have their baby and just get on with it and do it. And so that's, you know, I mean, obviously we don't want to trivialise it, as you say, Phil, because there are situations where, you know, we want to be in a country where we've got safe medical care if we need it.
Mm.
But for the very most part, most women can just get on and have a baby without much fuss and bother at all.
Mm. Mari, do you think that's, I mean, it's often an issue, and we've discussed it here in the program a few years back too, about, you know, the high rate of cesarean births in Australia and what some say, I mean, I make no judgment about it, of course, obviously, but some say this, you know, there's been, that birth has become overly medicalised and that really, you know, if, as Liz is saying, women generally, if left to their own devices with the help of a skilled midwife, the process is relatively trouble-free. Has it become over-medicalised, do you think, and who's at fault there?
Oh, I think it has become over-medicalised in so many ways. Who's at fault? that's a difficult one. There's always an agenda around most practices that happen across the country and internationally, to be fair. But if we drive fear in women, we drive them into a system that's fear-driven, and that's very difficult for them. I think one of the things that's really important to note is that even if those other 25% of women do have a problem, the ones that are standing with them all the way through are still midwives, even if there is an obstetric involvement. And that collaborative care is what's really paramount and so important and so well achieved in this country. So even with women that are having a problem, we can still minimise the interventions, and we can still minimise the risk and the adverse outcomes for those women by actually having it driven with midwifery care involvement.
Mm. How many babies do you reckon you've delivered, Liz?
Oh, look, that's a hard one.
Do you keep account? I did keep account
up until the point where I hit 800, and then I stopped. Yeah. And that is quite a long time ago. And look, these days I'm not doing as much of the actual birthing journey with women. I'm, you know, doing some of the management of the practice. But, you know, most midwives will do, if they're working private practice, will do 40 births a year with women, at least for their own clients, and then probably another 20 or so with their colleagues' clients. So, you know, it does add up reasonably quickly over time, and those working in the hospital system will certainly be doing more than that, because they're working sort of in a different model. They're not sort of seeing all of the women's journey, they're just seeing a little part of it, which is, you know, the birthing journey. So Mari will have done heaps more. Mari, what's your figure? I'll be interested.
How many have you brought forth, Mari?
To be really honest, I have to say, after 40 years of midwifery practice, I don't have any idea. and I think that actually talks about the way that I've practiced. And I think that each one of them is incredibly important and has been a wonderful experience. And for me, working in private practice, working one-on-one with women, and not just doing one of their children in the family, you know, I have one family particularly that I've birthed 10 of their 11 children. I think that it's such an honour that I don't actually want to count them. I just want to be involved, and I want to be able to make a difference at the coalface with each of those women.
When we were talking about this story and preparing it, Liz and Mario, I thought, gee, this must be the most satisfying of professions. I can understand, you know, that it can be stressful too, particularly, you know, if it's not going as well as it ought. But, gee, what about a job where at the end of it, most times there's a baby born? That's got to be pretty satisfying, doesn't it, Liz?
It's simply amazing. It is, honestly, I talk to my children who are growing up and say that I am just so, so lucky to have found something that I love so, so much. You know, you cannot believe how satisfying it is. And it is the sort of thing that you become really, really passionate about, and you can't help it, because it's just, you know, the most amazing part of a woman's life. So yeah, it's incredible.
What about you, Mari? Why did you become a midwife?
I fell into it from nursing, believe it or not, because I didn't like the other end of life.
I've got news for you, Mari.
I know. I've worked that one out. But look, I did fall into it, and I've been so honoured and privileged to be a midwife. I always say that the day I lose the being in awe of each birth and each woman's strength and power is the day I retire, and I haven't certainly even got close to that yet.
Mm. Yeah, I know. I mean, I was there for the birth of both our daughters, who were both born by a cesarean section. But every parent would know this too, when I say that it is the most overwhelming and emotional and miraculous thing that you will ever, as a human being, experience. I think, you know, does it ever seem like just the day in the office, Liz?
No, it never seems like a day in the office. And that's the thing. I think that the day in the life of a midwife is just so varied, from, you know, being with someone in birth through sitting through some sort of, test results and talking them through what that is, good or bad, through sort of the whole miracle of breastfeeding and being able to sort of, feed a baby, all kinds of things. And it's just, it's never a day in the office. It's never dull.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I can imagine yeah, dull. No. I can imagine dull is not the thing that it is. Mind you, Murray, I think the birth of our first daughter was sort of planned almost by appointment because of the nature of the cesarean operation. The second one, of course, came unexpectedly, and as I was turning on the lights in the operating theatre, because we were in a small hospital where. I think we seemed to be the only people there, as far as I could work it out. It was we were just on our own there. It's not a job where you can plan your day on a 9-to-5 basis, is it?
No, it's far from that. It certainly keeps you on your toes. It ensures that you are very flexible about what you do in your day, and that your family are very supportive of what you do each day. Because there's always interruptions, and there's always, on the other hand, the ability to be with your family in a way that is not always possible when you're working a regular hour type job.
What sort of relationship do you build, Liz, with a woman, if you're a midwife, before the birth?
Look, it's a pretty amazing relationship. It is really different to most other health professionals' relationships. I guess some people might get that, seeing a practitioner over a number of years, but you're really dealing with their deepest thoughts and fears. You're also dealing with sort of quite intimate processes and thinking around lots of different things, so you know them just so well. By the time you get to the birthing process, you sort of know pretty much everything about them, and you can sort of predict almost what they're going to do. And people will often say to me, gosh, how did you know I would need that or think that? And it's kind of just becomes a way of knowing what they're going to think, even in the process of labour. So, yeah, it's a fascinating experience. And as Mari says, the more times you do it with the same woman, the more you know them. And it becomes, almost like a semi-family relationship, because you know them so well and you've, formed such a bond with them.
Mari, is it a popular career choice for nurses to make, to do extra training in midwifery?
I think there is a crossover of nurses into midwifery, but I think there's a larger pull now from the community and women generally to just go straight into doing midwifery, because they don't want to go the nursing midwifery channel, and the direct entry has enabled them to do that.
No, and otherwise, I suppose the other part of my question was, is it that's right? Are we short of midwives, or do we have enough?
I think that we're always short of midwives. I think we know that we're going to have some shortages, and it's certainly a growing profession, because we're going into so many different roles now that we can see that we're going to need a lot more midwives. It is a very popular profession for women nowadays because of the training and the flexibility and the different options in careers. Mm-hmm. I think people are taking it to a totally different level, and certainly the university entrance scores and the competition for university placements, and certainly the competition for coming out into different, options in care is quite high. And so I think that it's definitely picked up in its popularity in this last little while.
Yeah. Look, Mari, I suppose most women feel, fear and apprehension, don't they, ahead of the birth? They look at the size of the baby and the size of themselves and think, dear me, how's that going to work? And the idea of the birth process being very painful is something they've read about. And indeed, it's a big thing in literature, isn't it? The long and painful birth process. How do you make women feel better about that process in advance?
Well, I think there's a lot to begun, like to be achieved during the pregnancy and the care. Doing one-on-one care with the midwife and the women makes such a difference in terms of building that relationship and that level of support that they know they're going to have their known midwife with them at the birth. And that relationship is so useful but also so strong. And I always say to women, if I look anxious, then you can be anxious.
Hmm.
And it actually holds true in so many ways, because if you don't know your carer and you've just met them and you've got change of shift and you've got, you know, who's walking through the door next, which midwife, who's gone to morning tea, if you've got that one midwife instead of that, it makes such a difference to women. And they start to know who they are rather than who they don't want to be, how they're going to cope with that pain.
Hmm.
So there's a big difference in the way that you can really honour and support that woman through that whole process.
I know mostly it's fine, and I think you mentioned 75% or more of births go ahead pretty much without incident. To both of you, though, maybe to you first, Liz, when things go wrong, of course, that's when a lot of anxiety sets in. It must be extraordinarily difficult as a midwife too, or do you see that to yourself as part of the training as well?
Oh, look, no, I don't think you could ever say that it's not difficult for everyone involved. It's tragic and it's difficult because, yeah, you know, we have had sort of stillbirth rates that have been pretty static across, you know, quite a long period of time.
It's hardly changed for years, has it?
Yeah, it's hardly changed. It's only, we're talking sort of about between around 6 per 1,000 births, and that is from sort of the definition is starts at 24 weeks of pregnancy. So we're talking, you know, even where babies are premature and so forth, and takes into consideration all sorts of things like babies with anomalies and, you know, lots of stuff. But regardless of when it is or how it occurs, it's still a really, really difficult thing for the woman, the family, and all the care providers involved. There's nothing to say, but, you know, obviously we all get quite a lot of training in that, but that doesn't lessen the pain and the anxiety and the angst.
How do you handle it, Murray? Because I suppose one of the other great anxieties that women must feel when the baby is out is it okay? What if it's not? How do you deal with that?
Look, I think it's really important, again, to have that relationship.
Mm.
I think we gain our strength because of our experience and our willingness to be with women. It's a very difficult process. Everybody goes through a grief process, including all the care providers, when there isn't a normal outcome. But in saying that, we just, for some reason, manage it and manage it in a way that is really as supportive to the families as we possibly can. And in saying that also, it doesn't mean that our care finishes at the birth. It can go on for weeks afterwards that we're there with them, walking that terrible scenario with them.
Mm. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, these days, of course, with a lot of advanced screening and testing and so on, a lot of issues are known about well before birth. That, I suppose, must to some degree make the situation easier. But as you say, the rate of stillbirth is still around 6 per 1,000 births, which means over 2,000 families a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you put it in those numbers, that's a lot of grief to be thinking about, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, look, you know, I think the thing is that I try and get women to focus on the fact that for most women, you know, it is a normal outcome. So it's important that they don't sort of get caught up in the fact that, you know, there's going to be something wrong. And I mean, worry is to a degree the way that women worry is the work of pregnancy. You know, they do worry a little bit through their pregnancy, and being supported, as Murray said, by a known care provider, a known midwife with them all the way along really does help that process. But it still is for everybody. It's always going to be, you know, a challenge until you've got to the point where you've got that baby in your arms and you know, it's there and all is well, because you're always going to think about it regardless of, you know, the work that we all do.
Mm. Yes, exactly, exactly. Murray, you're based in Goulburn. Midwives, I imagine, in rural and regional areas are more important than they would be in the city in a way, aren't they? Just because of the lack of specialised care elsewhere otherwise?
No, I think they're important wherever women are located. I think the difficulty for rural and remote women is the distances that they're requiring to travel to get to care or to do their antenatal or their pregnancy checkups. Or it's the distances that are the big one for them, and that's a very large challenge financially and you know, socially for them.
Hmm. Yeah, exactly. All right, 1-300-800-222. There are lines free if you want to grab one. Questions? Linda's on the line. Hi, Linda.
Yeah, hi. Look, I'm a nurse and a midwife.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to take a little bit of issue with one of your callers, one of your people there, sorry, who said, oh, I got into midwifery from nursing, as if it's somewhere totally different. You know, I'm proud of being both. And I really object to midwives now kind of thinking that they're separate from nurses. And, I just really feel upset about that in fact they've gone out on their own and they don't think they're nurses anymore. I mean, they're part of the nursing profession. And I really did object to that comment that I got into it from nursing.
Liz or Murray, you want to comment on that?
I'll answer that one if you like, because it wasn't me that made the comment. But in fact, they are actually two separate professions now. So since 2010, since 2010, the regulatory body has separated us onto two separate registers. So yeah,
I know, and I think it's disgusting. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Okay, all right, Linda. Why, yeah, okay. Well, I mean, Linda's entitled to a point of view, I guess.
Absolutely.
Liz, but what drives that annoyance, do you think?
I think that for some reason there is a group of nurses that have kind of not been happy with the separation of it, to have two different registers. And most of us that are of our age, Murray and my and Murray's age, have done both, have gone into, you know, been nurses first and then have done midwifery. So we know what Linda's talking about.
Hmm.
But it was decided as a result of lots and lots of consultation with both professions by our regulators and government and, you know, the professional bodies, that's the way that it should go for a range of reasons, mainly to do with that sort of level of training and the fact that there were lots of differences between the two professional groups that just couldn't be sort of easily wrapped into one professional body, and that we needed to recognise that there were actually differences there. So, but some people, you know, and obviously totally entitled to their own opinion.
Sure. I mean, one of my texters says, I have to disagree that direct entry midwifery is a good thing. To have a thorough knowledge of the human body as a registered nurse first is extremely important. To be able to manage high risk mothers with complex health issues like type 1 diabetes, lupus, cystic fibrosis, etc. It's not all just about the baby. What do you say about that?
Well,
Come in on that?
Yeah, come on, Murray.
Sure.
Yeah, no, look, I just want to come back a little bit to that. And when I said I fell into midwifery, it was really not something that I'd ever looked at doing,
mm-hmm.
and it was something that became available for me from nursing. I still hold my general nursing qualifications and are really privileged to work in both fields in certain ways. It's never an insult. I think that they are very separate careers these days, and I think to think that because you are a registered nurse that only gives you that ability to have the understanding of complexities of human physiology and anatomy is naive and silly. It's like, hold on, so midwifery does not take on that level of training that covers all of the requirements of education for women and babies and et cetera.
Hmm.
Yeah,
would a registered nurse have greater training though than a midwife?
No, and I wrote the first Bachelor of Midwifery curriculum for Griffith University, Phil. So I know the level of training that a midwife needs to do in those complex areas as part of their direct entry training, as the, you know, the one of the ways that it's referred to, which means that you're just doing midwifery as a standalone degree. And the level of training that's involved is intense. It's the same as, you know, it's like saying, well, physiotherapists can't be a physiotherapist because they don't have, you know, nursing first. I mean, a midwife is similarly trained, you know, to look after women, but they also have that very fundamental level of understanding of human physiology as well.
Okay, all right.
Interesting one.
Yeah. Sorry, Liz, did you want to jump in there?
No, I just said it's just interesting that everybody's gotten onto this one.
Murray,
absolutely.
Sorry. Go, Murray.
Yeah, no, I think look, within nursing, there are subspecialties as well. And so if you get a paediatric nurse or you get an emergency department nurse, they don't cross over, or very rarely. So they have their subspecialties. But it's just that midwifery has been identified as needing a separate register. It's not to say that we want to stomp on registered nurses' qualifications or anybody else. And as I said, I'm very privileged to have both qualifications and I use them. But to think that a midwife can't or should also be a registered nurse is just, it's an old thought in my mind.
Okay. Robbie, g'day, Robbie. Hi, Robbie.
Hello there.
Hi.
Just a quick call. I wanted to talk to you because my daughter is having her fourth baby in a couple of months, and each of her birth, she's been through using the midwives for delivery and consultation during the pregnancy, and she's just absolutely loved it. Really been delighted with the level of care and concern and compassion and helping her ease some of any of concerns that she may have. Any tests she's had to have, they've helped to organise whatever that's been required. She's totally loved the whole relationship with the midwife, and it's really for baby number four coming up. So I just wanted to thank your guests there, and I felt compelled to ring up before I went to bed to thank them and their profession for helping my daughter have such wonderful pregnancy and, well, births, yes. And pregnancy.
And pregnancy, yes, exactly. Thanks, Robbie.
Yeah.
Good on you.
So very, very much appreciated, girl.
Thank you. Thanks, Robbie.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Rodney's going to ask a question. I was going to ask the panel too. Hi, Rodney.
Hello, how are you?
Not bad.
I wanted to ask the girls what the percentage of male midwives is, because when I did my training in 2000, I finished in 2003 as a nurse, and I did my elective in midwifery and then tried to get into a program, and it was very difficult back then. I'm just wondering whether the acceptance has become greater.
That's a good, interesting question. Liz or Mari, who wants to go ahead with this one? I can see why Rodney might have had some issue. I mean, is there an acceptance of male midwives? Liz?
Yeah, look, I think that there definitely is probably... I mean, there's definitely an acceptance, but there definitely is a bit of a difference in the way that women relate to male midwives at times. But look, you know, I've seen some great midwives that have been male, and they often go into different areas of midwifery, often out in rural areas where they're combining skills in different ways. And I certainly would never discourage someone from wanting to be a male midwife, but I think that it is something that women will see, you know, a male midwife in a different way to the way that they see a female midwife.
Yeah, just harking back to your early comment, Murray, about women's knowledge and wisdom and common experience here, do you think that counts against male midwives?
I think it does to a level, but it's not necessarily about the male midwife's ability to work with women, because I've worked with some amazing male midwives over the years, and I have total respect for those guys. I think it's the perception that women have about it that is harder for them to open up about a lot of the issues, and I think it probably comes down to skill at some levels, but women's wisdom still is important, I believe.
Rodney, are you saying you weren't successful in trying to in eventually becoming a midwife, or you were?
No, I wasn't, but I eventually went into emergency nursing, and I was thankful of the training that I did, because I've delivered babies on the streets in the backseat of cars.
Absolutely.
And had some wonderful experiences with just having that background training. And I don't think, no nurse can't have that training. I think you do need it, even no matter what field of nursing you work in.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks,
Rodney. I totally agree.
Thanks, Rodney. Yes, interesting call too. Wendy, g'day. Hi, Wendy.
Hello, gentlemen and ladies.
Thank you.
I'm a registered nurse midwife, and I currently work in Northwest Tasmania.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very interested to hear what both of the midwives were saying about having a known carer in childbirth. We've actually, up at the northwest coast of Tassie, had a complete upheaval of our birthing services. They're actually now totally separated. A private hospital has the contract for the birth, and you rock up and you see a midwife that you've never actually laid eyes on before. The state government does antenatal care and the postnatal care and attendances at home after the birth, but the women are actually presenting at the hospital seeing a midwife they've never laid eyes on ever before. And I find that myself and most of the other midwives in the area are extremely distressed about it, because it is the world of difference to a labouring woman to have someone that she's built up a relationship of trust and built a rapport with, and then bang, there's a total stranger there to support you. I'm not saying that women, that midwives don't have the skills to actually build a rapport and develop a relationship of trust during labour, but it's so much easier if that person is already known to you.
Mm.
That's without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
We totally agree.
I think Liz and Murray would strongly agree with you. Thanks, Wendy.
I just also wanted to say that the women now actually have to travel approximately another 45 to 50 minutes to birth. And, gee, we've had an increase of birth babies born on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Thanks, Wendy.
It's a thing that's happening everywhere.
Hmm. Yep, all right. 1-300-800-222. We're talking with midwives Liz Wilkes and Murray Heath. My texter says, these are professional women. Stop allowing them to be called girls. That wasn't me. That was a fellow nurse. That was a fellow nurse. So, but your statement remains entirely correct, I'm sure. Marissa, hello.
Yes, good evening. Thank you very much for taking the call. I have a question. In Queensland, if you give birth, will the midwife assistance after birth be available if you've given birth in a public hospital, and for how long? And the second question is, if you didn't have that kind of care that you would expect, would you then be able to go and seek a private midwife assistance?
Liz, this sounds like a question up your alley.
Well, seeing as I'm in Queensland, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yes, look, the public hospital system in Queensland does provide one universal contact for women after their baby's born, but most of the public hospitals really only provide the one unless there's an issue. And if that one consultation isn't enough, you certainly can go and seek out the care or support of a private midwife, and basically just jump online and do a search. And you'll find that there's not loads and loads, but certainly pockets in lots of different places across Queensland. So should be able to reasonably easily access somebody to come and see you at home and provide you with some postnatal care if the hospital hasn't fulfilled your needs.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks, Marissa. Bye-bye. Yes, what do you do? Oh, actually, let's take Melinda's call first. Melinda, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I just wanted to really make a comment in relation to midwifery-led care, and I rang earlier when you were talking about the risks and a lot of women wanting to not have midwives because what if something goes wrong? And I think it's really important to also appreciate that these wonderful midwives, when you have a known carer, they actually identify much more quickly if something is going wrong. And I think that the midwife who knows their women well is a much safer option, even in a lot of cases, because they know straight away and they know their women. And on another topic, I had a male midwife. Wonderful.
Yeah, no. Thanks, Merit. Thanks, Melinda. Bye-bye. Yeah, no, thanks for the comment. Bye-bye. To both of you, Liz and Murray, what do you do, or how do you handle, I mean, these days there are often requests for different birthing techniques. So, but at various points, it seems that there is always, for want of a better word, a trendy birthing technique. I've been... We've gone through the passion for, you know, for at-home births, for water births. There was some controversy the other day about a so-called lotus birth, and so on and so forth. You know, if women want to do something a little bit unusual in birthing, how do you handle that, particularly if you may not have come across it before or you're worried about it? Murray, can you go first?
Oh, look, I think in 40 years I've seen just about all of it, really.
Right.
And to be fair, whilst they might be trendy processes or whatever, it's what makes the woman feel safest.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also about us working with the women as to what the pros and cons of those trendy processes are. And being skilled to identify if there is risk and early identify, as one of your callers has said, early identify if there is an adverse complication occurring and manage that in a really really efficient way. We often think that midwives are not skilled in complications in birth. We are, and we have to be. We're the ones that identify and escalate care. We're not the ones that sit there and go, oh, what do we do next? So it's really important that we actually support women in the way that they feel safe. And if that includes lotus birth or it includes water birth or it includes whatever, then it's up to us to work with the women.
Mm. Yeah, so what, Liz? If it's a breech presentation, you're quite happy with that, eh? Or do you immediately reach for the telephone?
No, look, I mean, the thing is, it depends on where you are and what you're doing in all circumstances. And I mean, certainly things like a breech birth, probably in this day and age, with the way that people's skills are most best handled in a hospital with a skilled practitioner around you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, I'm not saying that I'm you know, not going to make a comment about what other people would do and whether other people are skilled. But certainly from my experience and my level of skill, I'd want that to be occurring in a hospital, and I'd want that, you know, us to have a team of people available to us. But, you know, the different things like water birth and, you know, they really are a dime a dozen, to be honest, Phil. You know, when Murray said, when we saw that, she said she's seen everything, I'll bet she has pretty much seen everything. And those kinds of things, you know, I think we see the royals doing little fad things like the hypnobirthing and those things. They can be great techniques. They can be great techniques for, you know, a range of different health complications, doing, you know, hypnobirthing and hypnobirthing techniques. So I think we sort of need to look at them in the sort of sense that they are, that they can often be something that's quite helpful for women. Mm. So, you know, need to sort of make sure that we're not just sort of minimising the impact just because they've kind of gotten a bit trendy for a particular period of time.
Look, I know this is a comment from a male perspective, i.e. mine, but I must say when our children were both born, I know we thought tremendously, you know, about the birth process and thought about it a lot and worried about it and had the anxieties that every parents have. I must say, once the child is born and it's healthy and in your arms, you really just... The birth itself seems like a very distant thing very quickly because you're overwhelmed by the miracle of this new human. Do you are you able to convey that sense of you know what the birthing of a child is like, Murray? Do you think? And that, in other words, to stop people overly fixating on the birth as being the important thing.
Look, I often say to women, it's everybody focuses on the birth, but they forget about you've got to actually raise this baby.
That's right.
We need to be able to support women to move through that birth process in a way that minimises their trauma but also enhances the beautiful relationship and the joy that they have with their newborn, so that they can actually then move forward through being new mums and new parents and all that stuff in a way that's very positive. So I think for me it's imperative that we can make sure that we support women all the way through in a way that's very positive.
Yeah, exactly. Steve from Bel-Air sent me a funny text. He says, lovely midwives chat. I saw a fabulous bumper sticker saying, midwives, helping people out.
one of our midwives in our team had a bumper sticker that went viral, Phil.
Yeah.
And it said, the bumper sticker said, if I'm speeding, she's 8 centimetres. And we got all sorts of drama over that. And she kept getting booked all the time whenever she was driving somewhere. But it made sort of, you know, all the things in the UK, all the sort of talk shows and everything. It was very funny.
Mari, is the COVID-19 pandemic affected women and how they're giving birth in the last few months? Has it made a difference or not?
It has made a huge impact on women, and most of it's been around the fear of what COVID might do to them as pregnant women, but also their newborns, but also how they might birth their babies, because hospitals limited support people, they limited contact of visitors, etc. So there was a huge level of fear that drove a huge demand for women wanting to birth outside of hospitals. So the demand across the country became nearly viral, as another way of putting it. So I think that it has had a huge impact.
Jenny, hello. Hi, Jenny.
Hello.
Hi, Jenny.
Yes, hello.
Hi. Your question?
I was just wanted to ask your guests about the reaction to the midwife from Tasmania who said that there were many more births happening on the roadside. And they just seemed to pass it off as, oh, yes, that's happening. But my goodness, that sounds alarming to me. And I'm just wondering if there's anything they can do about it, or try and swerve whatever administration is creating the situation so that it won't happen. You know, that's a dreadful thing to sort of accept, that, oh, yeah, there's going to be more babies born on the side of the road. My God, it's 2020.
Yeah, I didn't think we were passing it off without concern, but Mari, your thoughts?
Look, I was far from passing it off without a large level of concern, because the issues for rural and remote women are massive, with the levels that they have to travel, not just for the birth, but also for even routine pregnancy care and the lack of postnatal care in their areas. So the creating of hubs of obstetric care has meant that there is greater distances for women to be travelling. There are ways around it, I'm sure, unless there's some political intent. We've had some comments with our Prime Minister this week around the Barton Highway and the distances between Yass and Canberra, and that will just improve the highway. But that's not going to prevent the births on roadside from those women that live near Yass or even further out. So I think unless we can actually open up those political conversations, but also health executives and managers conversations around it, then it's not going to improve.
Liz, do you think we ought to be aiming to have for more women to have their children, their babies at home? Would that be a good thing to aim for?
I think it is definitely a good thing to aim for. I think that it's actually a bit overdue in Australia, to be honest. I know that we do have long distances and that sometimes is given as a reason why we shouldn't be considering birthing at home. But I guess these kinds of conversations about babies being born on the side of the road, it's far safer to have your baby at home or in a, you know, small rural setting than
with a competent midwife by your side.
Like, I mean, far safer than with your husband trying to sort of catch your baby while they're talking to the ambulance, or worse still, with no service on the side of the road. So it absolutely is a conversation that really needs to be had with some degree of, foresight in this country, to be honest.
Murray, what's your thought on that?
Well, I've worked rural and metropolitan for the last 25 years, and I always say it's far better that I'm travelling to the woman if she's birthing at home, even if I can't get there in time. At least I'm on the phone, I have a relationship with her, and it's far better than having a baby on the roadside.
Yep. But as we say, all things being equal, even if there isn't a midwife there, generally birth will be okay. And I think we often don't think that, do we? And because of the fear and perhaps misinformation that's out there, Liz.
Look, I think it really is. We've gotten to the stage where we see so much in the media, you know, those ER moments of women being rushed around. So I think we've kind of got to get past that and make sure that we get back to the call of midwife and, you know, a bit of nice, positive sort of thinking around midwifery care.
And less of women being fiddled with, I think it was Murray's expression.
I probably shouldn't have used that term.
Anyway, we understand the way in which you were using it, don't worry. Yeah. All right, it's been a real privilege and a pleasure talking to both of you. Thank you. Murray Heath from Midwives Australia, thank you. And
thank you.
Liz Wilkes from My Midwives too.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.